Welcome to the Industrial IoT Spotlight, your number one spot for insight from industrial IoT thought leaders who are transforming businesses today, with your host, Eric Walenza.
Welcome back to the Industrial IoT Spotlight podcast. I'm your host, Eric Walenza, CEO of IoT1, the consultancy that helps companies create value from data to accelerate growth. And our guest today is Stefan Schwab, CEO of Enlighted. Enlighted is a leading prop tech provider of IoT solutions for space optimization, building management, business productivity, and sustainability. In this talk, we discuss the two megatrends that are reshaping the office today: the need of a hybrid workforce and the drive for sustainable building operations. We also explored the long tail of use cases that leverage Enlighted's sensor data to improve employee productivity, track assets, and improve visibility into operations. If you find these conversations valuable, please leave us a comment and a 5-star review. And if you'd like to share your company's story or recommend a speaker, you can email us at team@iot1.com. Finally, if you have an IoT research, strategy, or training initiative that you'd like to discuss, please email me directly at erik.walenza@iot1.com. Thank you. Stefan, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me, Eric.
Yeah, it's funny. We were just working with a company that distributes IoT devices for a number of different industries, and they were asking for support, looking into new industries. And Enlighted is one of the first, kind of vendors that popped up on their priority list. And I was just, you know, reading it kind of in depth through your company yesterday, and then remembered that on my calendar I had this conversation. So really looking forward to learning a bit more from the CEO here, Stefan.
Yeah, thanks. That's actually great to hear that we are on top of mind of many people, and I think also what we provide is actually spot on at the moment, and I'm really excited to be here, talk about IoT, how IoT can help and drive sustainability. And it's an amazing topic on everybody's mind, and looking forward to our conversation, Eric.
Yeah, well, as you said, it's really a timely topic. So maybe we can start there. But before we jump into that, I'd love to understand a little bit more of your background. So it looks like you're kind of old Siemens. Is it true back in 2006 that Siemens was basically your first landing point after graduating from university?
Yeah, that is correct, actually. I joined the almost oldest startup, which is now 175 years, Siemens. I just turned 175 years last year after I graduated from university. And since then, I got amazing opportunities inside Siemens. So starting in Germany, as you can hear maybe from my accent, originally from Bavaria, and then moved on different roles in Germany, but then got the opportunity to work in Asia and Singapore for a bit, but then moved on to Melbourne in Australia, which was an amazing experience culturally, but also personally for my family and myself. And then since 2018, I'm here in the US, Silicon Valley, and this is also an amazing opportunity, fast-changing environment, the ecosystem here, and everything. So I get up every morning and have the opportunity to learn every day something new, which makes this so exciting. And so even if I'm a long-term Siemens employee, I think it's not like that. It doesn't feel like I'm just with one company. It actually really feels like I got so many different opportunities where maybe in another arena you would have to change companies. And here I got this opportunity with one employer, which is Siemens. And for me personally and also my family, it was an amazing journey so far.
Yeah, well, that's a good way to put it. The world's oldest startup, right? We do a lot of work. I'm based here in Shanghai, China. But we do a lot of work with the Siemens strategy in market intelligence and so forth. But you can always see that they're thinking, what's next on the horizon and how do we evolve the business, right? If you don't evolve, you don't last to be a 200-year-old company, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So how did you then end up at Enlighted? I saw that I think Siemens acquired the company in 2018. And so it sounds there that you're the first CEO. What was the process of you kind of landing in this position?
I mean, as I said before, I got these different choices every 4 or 5 years, what is next in my career. And then again, after almost four years in Australia, there was then the decision to make for, first of all, personally, do we go back to Germany or is there anything else where I can add value to customers, to the company? And also then what is interesting personally for me. So then the opportunity came up because Siemens during that time actually did 3 acquisitions at the same time. And I got in touch then via Siemens executives in Germany with the US organization. And we spoke about, hey, there's a potential with a new arena we want to tap into, which is IoT and subscription-based business for the building market. We actually see there's a lot of disruption on the horizon, and we want to prepare ourselves. And actually, Stefan, would you be interested actually looking into that and maybe even lead that? It's a little bit different to what I did really in the past, where I was really at the core business of Siemens's building technologies business, mainly focusing on HVAC systems, fire system, access control system, intrusion systems, and so on. But I was excited about it because I would say in the last year I was in Australia, I started to engage with a lot of startups in Australia. And this was exciting to me because I already could see that there is a potential for disruption. It doesn't mean that every startup is going to disrupt the industry and incumbents, but there's a lot of potential there with their ideas. And most of the startups in Australia also went on to North America because the market is bigger, to explore this market there. And this is how I got a little bit in touch with startups. And then Siemens offered me this opportunity, besides going back to Germany, and then spoke with family. We said, yeah, excited. Didn't know a lot about Silicon Valley. Didn't know a lot about the VC world here. I was sold on San Francisco. In the end, we ended up far south from San Francisco, close to San Jose here in the valley. But again, I love it, as I said before. I also say I learn every day something new, which is amazing. So it's not really not boring at all. It's really exciting. And this is, yeah, how I ended up here then in 2018. And I'm looking even forward to the next couple of years because it's a lot of fun. It's challenging, but it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and as you alluded to, I mean, this is just from a timing perspective, really an incredible time to be in this type of business. So maybe we can kind of get into what the business of Enlighted does. I mean, you're covering some of the big topics that are kind of shaking the world broadly right now. So topics related to how do people live in spaces? How do we, you know, as the workforce evolves? And then also topics related to sustainability and how do we, I think a lot of people don't realize how energy consumptive buildings are, right? We look at, you know, maybe we look at agriculture, we look at cars. Those are a little bit easier to understand. But certainly that's a mega trend right now. When you look at your business, what are the big value proposition levers? What are the big trends that you're, you know, focused on right now?
The big value proposition is where we focus on is sustainability. Sustainability and energy reduction, CO2 reduction via IoT, and focusing on the users, so focusing on people. People are in the center of what we do, if it's with our IoT devices or if it is with workplace experience applications what we provide. This is where we focus on, because we collect a lot of data, a lot of relevant data. And you just said it before, buildings contribute more than 40% overall to the energy consumption in the world. And in the building itself, it's humans and it's technology then who also consume a lot of energy, for sure. And we focus on actually where they come together, where people come together with the building, where they work or where they live. And this is our value proposition. And again, this is spot on. These topics are spot on. When I think about sustainability or CO2 reduction is a major topic these days. On the other side, when we think about hybrid flexible work is a major topic. And these are the things we are addressing with our technology. And again, I just say it again, what is important for us, we put the human in the center, because only when you have humans on board, you can solve these massive problems, what we just spoke about.
Yeah, well, maybe we can get into the stakeholders here, because when you say sustainability, I'm imagining that in the life cycle of the company, that was not the first focus, right? Back in 2009, some people were concerned about sustainability, but it was more of a niche topic. Today, it's become one of the key topics. So I imagine there was an evolution there. And then, as you said, the human has to be at the center. And even if sustainability is a very significant corporate concern, and it might be a personal concern for a lot of employees, it's not something that day to day you go into the office and you think, okay, what you realize is you recognize your life quality in the office. You don't necessarily recognize your carbon output and so forth. So I guess you need to balance these different priorities between the actual users of the facilities, maybe the businesses that are renting the offices or the facility, and then the business, the building owner, the facility owner in the end. So how do you look at the stakeholders that you're involved with and then balance their different priorities when it comes to what, you know, what you're actually delivering?
I can tell you one thing, and you mentioned it just before, it got far more complex, because the stakeholders and also the level of impact the different stakeholders are making these days increased heavily. And for me personally, when I look at the business, it increased heavily during the last 2.5 years due to the global pandemic and how we started then to use buildings again and how we also started to implement hybrid or flexible work. And this is actually a huge challenge because you have to have more people who give input on what systems and what solutions need to be deployed. And then it's not then only, as you said as well, it's not only then the sustainability topic. On the other side, employees, they also care about their well-being. What has the office to offer for me that I actually make the journey to the office, because it's different to compared to 3 years ago when it was kind of a daily habit when you went to the office. Today, it's a different story. When do you go to the office? We call it activity-based working. That's when you come to the office, when it makes sense that you go there to collaborate or do a certain kind of work. It does maybe not make sense. And I give you an example, when you just do one-on-one calls, Zoom calls the whole day, there it does not make sense to come to the office. So that's the one part. And on the other side, all the big boards or the big companies have now sustainability on top of their agenda. And there it's about reducing energy consumption, getting greener, meeting their carbon zero targets, and so on. And there I want to link it a little bit to the beginning of the company, which goes back to 2012 with the first customers. The company had in mind, when they looked at all these big high-rise buildings or enterprises where the lights were burning all day, all night long without the floor being used. And then the idea of the founders was, hey, something needs to be done there. First of all, there is a problem to solve. And secondly, there's also something to do for the environment, because this cannot be sustainable if the lights are on all night long. So they started actually linking the first idea, the sensors, to reducing the energy consumptions of the lights. And with the first and second installation, what they figured out is actually with how they developed and architected the sensor, is that they collect far more data, which goes beyond the energy consumption. It goes into, okay, when are people walking in? How are they using the space? Are they gathering in this part of the building? Are they gathering somewhere else? And then this idea developed even further. What else can you do with this data? So you can link this data to all other systems the building is using and help also the other system to reduce the energy consumption, because now you know actually where are people? How long are they in for? Which areas of the building they prefer to work in. So all these kind of use cases developed further and further. And then in 2020, when COVID hit, even more use cases actually developed. I think of our business, when COVID started, mainly here in North America, a customer who had our system in place approached us and said, look, you have all the data. Maybe you can help me to do social distancing in the office. When we remember the days where it was 6 feet or 1.5 meters in Europe, in the metric system, but you had to keep distance and companies needed to comply with this, they came back to us and said, hey, can you help with your system, with your platform actually to guide our employees or to guide our enterprise through this time? And actually we could. And we developed quickly a new product, which we called during the time safe, so that people really could accommodate social distancing. Ties back to the evolution, what you mentioned before, the evolution of the company. And when I look ahead, I see the same thing happening again, because there will be more and more iterations of what we are doing today when I think about what other use cases are coming our way.
Yeah, that's really fascinating to understand, actually, that sustainability was kind of at the core of the company from day one. And then it really evolved into understanding how can these data points be used to also solve other problems. And I'm a little bit surprised, or it's interesting to understand that the same hardware that's being used to manage the energy management systems, the lighting control systems, can also support these other use cases. For some reason, I was kind of imagining them being quite distinct, you know, products, and you kind of choose A or B, and then you maybe at a higher level you can integrate them. But it sounds like you're finding ways to use the same technology to solve multiple problems. I mean, what does that look like from a portfolio perspective then, as you're bringing new things to market? Is the focus on, I mean, I guess there's a balance here, but around what new sensors we need to put in to collect new data, but it sounds like it might be less that, more what new analytics tools we can build to make better use of the data or to visualize it for different user groups, for different use cases. When you think about the priorities for you from a portfolio development, where are the big focus areas?
So, I mean, first of all, the sensor, as you mentioned before, it has a lot of capabilities. And that's the beauty, because more capabilities in the sensor enable also my use cases later on. So how do we do that? For example, when I talk about social distancing, this we do with Bluetooth radios. So Bluetooth is the technology we're using. The sensor has two Bluetooth radios, one to send and one to receive. And this actually opens up a lot of additional use cases, which we had not in mind originally. When I look, what do we do from a technology point of view? So the sensor also evolves regularly, but the sensor itself and the technology doesn't evolve as fast as, on the other side, the use cases we see with the data, and also where do we feed in this data to create even more value for our customers. So this is evolving much, much faster. And also the demand from customers evolving much faster, that they say, can you help me to make sense out of this data? Because just providing that data doesn't really help the customer to drive more outcomes for them. What you need to do is actually to enable the customer, or to support also our customers, and okay, what now does this actually mean when you look at that set of data, and how can you link it to help me to achieve my goals, which in the end could be well-being in the office, or preparing the office for a big day because people are coming in on the other side, but also can you help me to reduce more energy if it's actually needed? So I can give you one specific example. In the heat wave in California in September last year, we had one of our big technology customers, downtown San Francisco, reaching out to us and saying, look, we ordered all employees into our office because we don't want them to stay at home and use the air conditioner at home and have a big load on the grid. We actually want to help the Californian grid here, or in the Bay Area, the grid to be relaxed a little bit, because employees are not using at home the air conditioning. They use it in the office. But now we want to do even more. Can you actually reduce the energy consumption on our lights to a certain extent, but not make any compromise on well-being for the employees, that it's still bright enough so they can do work? And by doing that, we help this specific customer to save the energy which normally Californian 128 Californian homes consume in 1 year. And this was just for one afternoon. And these are the things where you can see how you make an impact with the system, and how you also, I always see this flexibility in the system, what it actually can do when it needs to perform, how quickly you can act and respond to events like that. And that's actually the impact. That's great for us as a company. We can see it, but it's also great for our customers.
So that's an interesting use case. So let's see, you have quite a large cluster of use cases under space intelligence, sustainability solutions, workplace solutions. What I'm thinking about then is the ability to extract insights from across your portfolio of customers. So you, of course, building by building, you can help them to optimize their existing environment. But you, I imagine, also are extracting insights from across your portfolio of customers so that you can say, well, what if you reconfigured your operating environment? You might be able to have outsized benefits. And also still meet the needs of customers, of employees, maybe even improve the employee workplace in ways that maybe a building manager is not even thinking about. Because I think people tend to think about incremental improvements, incremental changes in the existing environment, as opposed to thinking what are different configurations that might be possible. But I imagine your sensors are looking at so many different configurations across so many different customers. You're probably have the ability to understand what are more optimal situations, what are less, from a higher perspective. Is that insight that you're able to bring in today, or are you looking at how to kind of leverage that larger data pool across your portfolio of customers? I guess there's also some privacy or kind of data management issues there, which are a bit more technical, but also have to be addressed.
Yeah, we cannot share data across customers, because data is customers, we honor the data privacy of our customers, so we don't share that. What we can say is that we have seen, for example, with other customers, that they do A, B, and C, and then can make a reference to a specific customer. A lot of our customers have a large portfolio of buildings around the world, and actually this already is sufficient to point out how, for example, buildings operate in this part of the world compared to this part of the world. Or even, I mean, when you look at North America, very big, you can say how buildings operate in the middle of the country compared to the West Coast and the East Coast. So you can make already a lot of comparisons there and help the customer and guide the customer to achieve whatever their target is, if it's, again, sustainability, well-being, linking it to other systems. So yeah, but you raised a very good point before, and this is the topic of looking at things holistically and not in a silo. Because what we see a lot of times today, when we think about smart buildings, that the systems are looked in a siloed way and not in a holistic way what other systems you have in the building. Because when you do that, and we have the opportunity and how we go to market and how we interact with our customers, this makes then a real difference, and in my opinion, makes then a real smart building. But there are not many out there because, as I just said before, I see too many approaches which are siloed when it comes to how data is exchanged to make most use out of the data, what different systems gather. But we get there now. And again, we are there sometimes on the forefront. Sometimes we provide data to other systems, which they then have the overarching look at the different subsystems in a building. And this is getting better and better. And that's actually then also the beauty of IoT, when these different systems which provide data talk to each other and make use of the data to, again, comes to whatever use case or whatever pain point the customers have wanted to address.
So this topic of looking at the building holistically, I think, is quite interesting. And it would be great to hear maybe a couple case studies. And if you can share company names, great. If you want to anonymize them, that's fine. But to understand maybe one from a brownfield situation where you have an existing, you know, 20-year-old business building, and they're trying to figure out what can we do on the existing footprint. And then I guess in a greenfield situation where you're building from scratch, you might have a lot more potential to look at, okay, what are our opportunities to really optimize this building, since we're, you know, we can make all the infrastructure decisions together with our vendors. So are there a couple cases that come to mind in those two examples? It'd be really interesting to understand the thought process of what are we trying to accomplish, and then how do we implement it, and where are the limits? Where do we say, okay, the cost benefit is going to starting to hit up against some limits here?
Yeah, let's divide that. So you said brownfield and greenfield. Let's start with brownfield. Brownfield, one example is in France. There's a company called Geodis, a big logistics company. They also have a footprint in North America, or they have a footprint around the world. And we started with them in France. And it started, like always, the entry point is always when we talk with about our sensors. It's about reducing the energy consumption and making the building smarter via lighting control. This is always the entry point when we have a discussion. And when we started with this discussion, then we go beyond. And then, okay, what else are the pain points you're having? And in that instance with Geodis, it's about asset location. So this means that we can help them in their warehouses to find certain assets. And again, this happens via Bluetooth communication between sensors and whatever asset they're trying to find. And this asset could be something they stored in the warehouse. This asset could be that this is a cherry picker they're looking for, and so on and so on. And this is a very strong use case we see more and more in manufacturing and logistics. But again, the starting point is energy consumption, sustainability, making the lighting smarter. But then it always goes further, especially with the companies which think ahead already, a couple of years ahead. Then you always have this discussion. When I think of, and this implementation in brownfield, what is normally nice as well, you can see the impact faster compared to greenfield, because it's always longer cycles until you have a greenfield building up. On the greenfield side, here on the East Coast in the United States, we have a big entertainment company, which we also started again with the lighting control, even in the greenfield part. But then also this company said, hey, we have more and more use cases. Can you actually, with your technology, address also these use cases? And there with this company, with this entertainment company on the East Coast, it went into space utilization. Can you help me then later understand how our employees are using the space? And then maybe we can reconfigure the space. Also, can you help me to find also certain assets in this building? Or maybe even with your technology, can you help me? Because we get a lot of visitors who want to see this building. Can you help me to guide these visitors through the building? Or actually, can we also restrict the visitors to get into certain areas of the building? And yes, we can. That's, again, the beauty of this IoT technology, that you can expand into these different use cases you debate with the customers. And yes, there are limits. You mentioned the return on invest limit. Yes, return on invest limit or return on invest is also always on the forefront of the customers, especially when it comes to they want to have a payback in a certain period of time. Then you have to see, does this use case make sense? Does this use case address that? But sometimes it's really about a smart building. And then in this instance of the entertainment company, it was about a smart building. It was really not about the return on invest. And we also see that more with the return on invest discussion in the brownfield approach compared to greenfield approach, actually. And when you think about that in a building, 80% of the costs are related to operating the building in the life cycle part. And only 20% are upfront in about the infrastructure, what you put in the building. We always tend as society or as businesses to make adjustments at the 20% because we don't worry about the 80%. But the real costs, they come up in the 80%. And if you would invest more upfront in proper technology, you could save so much money and energy on this 80% later. This is amazing. And again, discussions more and more when we talk about that, and this is actually factual data. So this is data available everywhere that you have this 20 and 80%, 20% upfront, 80% later. But when you get a chance to address this with a customer, there is actually no ROI discussion necessary anymore because you can really show the benefit of systems like ours, what they actually can do later on in the life cycle. Besides that, this is a smart building, like I said before, guiding visitors, also restricting access for visitors in a building because something is confidential where they shouldn't go, and so on and so on.
Yeah, that's interesting. I didn't know that. I mean, I knew that there were very big carbon implications in operations, but I didn't know that 80-20 rule. Yeah, and also interesting, this long tail that you're mentioning. So it sounds like there's a handful of use cases that kind of pay the bills, let's say. So energy consumption management, and those are what the ROI is going to be calculated around. And then it sounds like there's this long tail of use cases where somebody says, I've got a specific problem that's a bit unique to my business. And if you can help me solve it, it has a lot of maybe intangible value. It has strategic value. It has value for how we impress our customers or how we delight our employees or how, you know, we basically accomplish some goal. You're working across a number of different areas, of course. I mean, I guess every business uses buildings, right? So maybe we can quickly touch on what are the big areas. So commercial real estate, healthcare, you mentioned already warehousing, manufacturing, I would imagine universities. If you look at the top industries for you, maybe historically and also going forward, I don't know if that might differ in the next 5 years, but what are the markets that you're really focused on?
So the markets we're focusing on is companies or verticals which really try out also technology. Because what I also have to say, when I think back to 2012, I joined the company 2018. And then we added the workplace experience part actually to the company in 2018, which was originally a separate Siemens acquisition. We combined these two companies for many, many reasons. And what I figured out with both companies, actually, we went into a market which was not completely defined. We were really early on in these markets. And when you are early on in these markets, I have to say in hindsight, when I look at all the data I see for our company, it's important to be around tech companies. Because tech companies also tend to try out new things and they don't ask you all the time, where else have you deployed it? So they are actually the ones who help you to be the first ones who deploy it. And then you can say to other companies, hey, we have it deployed there, we have it deployed here. So it's not like that you're a guinea pig. And that's actually very important. So we started really in this tech world in the Silicon Valley area where companies were willing to go in with us and try out new things in a market which we just also ourselves with some others starting to develop, actually like a new category in a market. When I think about workplace experience or hybrid work solutions, is a complete new category in the integrated workplace management market. But going further then, and so you mentioned healthcare, you mentioned also, or I mentioned as well, manufacturing and logistics, you can actually see that buildings are operated almost similar in every kind of vertical. The lights are on all the time. They have use cases in healthcare, like logistics use cases where it's important to locate assets. We call it location intelligence. You have also challenges in the healthcare market. How is the space used? Because one of the other use cases is that our customers want to look at data. Can they actually get rid of some space because it's underutilized? And a lot of times what we heard, especially pre-pandemic, is oh, we need to build new phone booths. We need to build more meeting rooms, because never when we use a meeting room, there's a meeting room available. The nice thing with the system, with our system, is we can actually show with data that it's not the case. And before that, it was just anecdotal, or it was just somebody was shouting something. But now with the system, you can actually prove if you need more meeting rooms, or if you need more phone booths, or actually if you need less, because you already have enough. And there's just maybe once a week the time where everybody's looking for the same room. And maybe you also have then two people sitting in a meeting room, which is supposed to hold 10 people, and so on. So you can make these adjustments. So coming back to the industry, so we figured out that these problems exist across different verticals. What doesn't exist across different verticals, in my opinion, or what we see, is actually the endless use cases. So there, that's the reason why we picked the ones manufacturing, logistics, healthcare. There you see a lot of pain points we can solve, or most of the pain points we can solve, I would say. And there are other areas. When I think about a data center, you're then almost, it's about the energy consumption, and it's about this data center needs to run. There cannot be an outage in this data center. These are the main use cases there, and that's it. But then again, in the other verticals, we see actually, I sometimes say endless use cases. I think so, because every week there's a new use case I haven't thought about. The customer asks us, hey, can you do that, or can you help us with that? And that's the amazing part of these industries and these verticals we are in.
Mm. Yeah, no, very interesting. When it comes to then this ideation around new use cases and kind of unique problems that companies have, what's your, as a technologist, what's your view on kind of low-code platform, allowing the customer to kind of hack things together with a toolkit versus them coming to you with a problem to solve and you taking more of a consultative approach? I mean, there's trade-offs there, but where do you land on this topic?
I mean, very interesting point. Siemens also made an acquisition with Mendix in the low-code arena almost at the same time they acquired us, and we actually collaborate with them. They are based in Rotterdam, but they have a big office here also in the US. So sometimes actually we go together hand in hand to solve customer problems. When it comes to low-code, I believe there's a place for low-code, which is a little bit different for our place, because when I talk about user centricity, and today we get more and more with our business into a consumer-based business. So our customer is the end user. And the end user, because of private experience with Amazon, for example, has a certain requirement when it comes to applications, what they want to use here, mainly when I talk about workplace experience. So I believe with low code, you don't get to this level of experience consumers are expecting these days. So then they come back to us. User interface, user experience is very important. So then I don't believe that low code is the best answer to this part. But then there are other parts in the industry where low code is a really good answer for certain use cases, and it's actually quick, and it's quick and it's good and yeah, perfect. So, but a lot of times I don't see us competing with low code platforms in the market. I actually see us partnering, because we address different problems for a different buyer persona. Also, our end customer is not always IT. Low code platforms normally go to IT and help them to solve problems. When I think about our customer set, it's a lot of times the executive suite, because we address problems which executives have on their mind these days, like how can I bring back, I said it at the beginning as well, how can I bring back employees to the office, and can you actually help me with your application there to make it as easy as possible for employees to come back to the office and decide what is a good day, what is a good activity to be in the office, things like that.
Okay. Well, interesting. Maybe we can stay on that one for a sec. So,
yeah,
because that's a very human problem. So how do you, as a company that basically, you know, has access to data and analytics, how would you approach that problem of helping a company to entice employees to return to the office?
So what we figured out with our research, extensive research, is employees come to the office, or people come to the office because of other people. They don't come to the office because there's free pizza or there's a free donut. They want to collaborate with people, and they want to make sure that when they come, that the people they want to collaborate with in the office are in the office as well. And this is how we help our customers these days, that we take away from employees this cognitive load to figure out with different platforms and reach out to other employees when they need to come to the office. So we try to take this barrier away and make it as simple as possible for companies who want to address hybrid work. Because we also have a lot of customers now which actually make it mandatory. Just 2 days ago, Disney announced publicly that employees have to come back 4 days a week into the office. And for these companies, I mean, it's easy. They come Monday to Thursday in the office. Friday apparently is the day they don't have to come. There's no need to take away this load. For them, it's important because they have all the employees back in the office to have a desk reservation and room reservation tool, which we provide as well. So a different kind of problem here. The companies, which is the majority overall, when I look at our research, the big bubble in the middle is hybrid work. And hybrid work is flexible, like Siemens does as well, where we have 3 days in the office and 2 days remote. But remote doesn't mean have to be in the home office, can be wherever you can perform your work. And for these 3 days, which an employee can choose freely, there you need to provide a solution and make it as easy for them to come to the office and decide when to come. And I think if you can realize that as a company, so not with the we provide the technology, but if the company can actually give this powerful tool to the employee, then you will see more people coming into the office voluntarily without having to force them. Because also employees don't like to be forced and told by their employer these days when to come to the office. Also what our research shows us. And then when they come to the office with our IoT technology, we can actually say, okay, what do they do in the office? Where do they go? Do they actually, when they reserve a desk, do they sit at this desk or can we release the desk again? And then also if maybe only 10 people come into the office and we know where they want to sit, then we only have to put air conditioning or heating. Now at the moment it's cold in California, heating in this part of the building and don't have to heat up the whole building. And this kind of intelligence, and this, I think, this comes then also back to sustainability, can really make a huge difference in terms of what I said, where we work, where work, people, and the building come together, or the space comes together. This is the sweet spot.
Okay, fascinating. Yeah, we're a relatively small company, but struggling with the same issue right now of communicating to employees why it's important to be back in the office. But I have the same experience there, that it's really about creating that critical mass of people so that you have a problem and you can just look to your left, look to your right, and ask somebody, you know, for a quick 5 minute chat, exactly. Which you really, hypothetically you can do over a phone call, but it's not the same, right? To be able to poke over to a laptop and have a and share with somebody. Stefan, let's touch briefly on the business model. I always think, I mean, one of the most exciting parts of IoT is the ability to innovate with business models. And here you have a business where you're selling a lot of CapEx, I don't know if it's CapEx, you're selling a lot of hardware. You're selling a lot of kind of front-end applications. You have a very powerful back-end platform with analytics. And then you also have services. So you have all these different elements, and I guess there's a thousand different ways that you could combine those into different pricing models and business models. But what have you found to be most effective for your customers?
So for our customers, when you think about the infrastructure, still that this is a CapEx project. What we tried to do at the beginning is convincing that this could all be subscription-based, and the sensor is just an end to the means to the end, that you need it to make all these services and all these software applications possible for them. But this is really hard because also I come back to the complexity of the market, because you have so many different stakeholders and so many different people in a company who hold different budgets. So that was hard to combine. But what excited me also to come here, because I think one of the things I wanted to achieve, or I'm going to achieve with the company on this journey, is also to make this whole business more and more subscription-based. It doesn't work like that overnight, what I said before, with a switch on and switch off because of the complexity, but over time it will be possible. And I also believe over time the importance of the sensor itself will go down a bit, because again, the sensor needs to provide data that you can build use cases on top of that. And we also ingest other kind of data from other sensors. We are completely open in that arena. And I can see then actually really the benefit for the customer lies in the end then what you do with this data. And you're right. I mean, in the IoT space, it's really about the business model, and it's about the ecosystem. With whom can you partner, and who can help you actually to get more and more of the infrastructure into the market to provide these use cases for your customers or for the increasing customer base then in the end. And that's the interesting part. What I really personally have to say I overestimated that this can happen faster. And I think there's still, because we in the building industry, in my opinion, it's a very traditional industry, And the change is really happening not as fast as in other industries. The adaption is not as fast because also there are not so many disruptors out there that you have this fast change there for the building industry, that it took longer, or it takes longer than I originally expected it will take, that we can change business model and make it more attractive and also make the deployment much faster than it is today.
Yeah. It's always more challenging, right? Because it's not just about does it work, but it's also about procurement processes and contracts and human behavior. This topic of partnerships, I think, quite interesting as well. Because I know, you look at a company like Johnson Controls for HVAC systems or Otis Elevators for the elevator systems. I mean, they're also touching on some of these topics, right? What's the movement of people on elevator systems? They have a lot of data there and so forth. When you talk about partnerships, are you primarily focused on partnering with technology companies that are helping you with different parts of the tech stack, like Mendix, or are you collaborating with companies that also have infrastructure in a building and might have different data sets as yours? And if you can combine those data sets, you can develop new insights that individually you wouldn't have access to.
Correct. Yeah, we do both, actually. And even we go beyond that. So we partner, for example, with what we would originally consider as competitors who have other kind of sensors. But in the end, this actually is also what's happening in the market, because sometimes you go into a building and you already have an infrastructure in place. So there's no need then to provide more infrastructure. So we partner with them. We partner with companies like a Johnson Control as well. When the customer has a BMS, a Johnson Control BMS system in there, and we feed data into the system that we can make, as I said, with one of the use cases, also to link the data we gather to the HVAC system, air handling units, chillers, and so on. And then on the other side, when we look at the go-to-market, we also have partnerships with Salesforce. Then we see how can we go to market and how can we actually increase our reach as we are a smaller company. Yes, we have the big company Siemens behind us, but also their selling motion is a little bit different compared to our selling motion. Their buyer for the system Siemens is providing is a different buyer persona on the customer side than we have. So then sometimes it's more beneficial to us to have partners for certain markets in other areas, like, again, Salesforce is a software company. Sometimes it's beneficial for us to go with Siemens, and a lot of times we also go with Siemens competitors, because Siemens market share is not 100% out there, so they also have a limited customer set there. So we are open there also to partner with others. And technology side, always, I can mention VergeSense here, for example, which produces a different type of sensor, camera-based sensor. We also partner with VergeSense, for example, go together. They take us to a customer, we take them to a customer, if it actually responds to the demands of the client.
Okay, that's great. I'm glad to hear that you have the freedom to partner with the most effective partner. I think the breaking down of some of these silos is a healthy thing for the industry. So I think we've covered a good bit of ground here. There might be a couple other things that you want to touch on, but one thing that I wanted to pick your brain as a last question for me is 2023. What's exciting for you in the year ahead as we emerge from COVID and move into this new world, whatever that might look like?
Yeah, I mean, what's really exciting for me, and this is also a personal topic for me as a person, is the topic of sustainability and reducing the energy we as society use. And I think we are gaining more ground now in the discussion. Unfortunately, still a discussion. I want to see that implemented. And what I'm a true believer in, that there's enough technology, or there's already technology developed to address this big problem of climate change and what we can do in the building space. I come back to the number I said before. Buildings make up for 40% of the energy consumption around the world. So we can do a lot there. And the number of smart buildings is so small. So there's so much to do. Technology is there, and we have to get from just talking about it to really getting into implementation. And I see a shift there, that implementation is now starting, and then we will really see the impact. And interesting enough, I saw a report last night about the actions taken to reduce FCKW years ago, to cover the ozone layer in above the earth. And actually now, so many years later, when they banned when they banned this, now they can see the impact. And I have the same hope now with IoT, smart buildings, and what we do there for sustainability using this technology, that in a decade from now, we also can see the real impact and that we reduce our energy consumption. The other piece which is really exciting for me is that the topic of, we call it a lot of times, future of work. And future of work for me means just how are we going as a society to work in companies. Is it hybrid? Is it fully remote? Is it full in the office? And again, when you do fully remote, or you do full in the office, or you do fully hybrid, you always need technology to enable that. And that's also exciting for me, because also there, the technology is there, and this opens up so many opportunities for us as a company, but also for our customers to deal with this and be an attractive employer. Because as I also mentioned before, when we spoke about these buildings and what we see in the market about our customers, what all the customers realize is that they cannot operate their buildings to attract employees anymore how they have done it 10, 15 years ago. And this goes beyond, is it the workplace experience application they're using to make it as easy and as comfortable for employees to come back? It's also about how they operate the building. And you said it correctly, that it's not on top of mind of every employee when they come to the office, is it now a sustainable day for me in the office or not? But what we hear and see more and more, and I see that when I do interviews, the question of applicants comes up more and more to me as an employer, or also to our customers as an employer, is what do you do about sustainability? And if you say so, how can you show me what you do there, not only tell me? And I think this is important. This is an exciting time, because I think we are at the brink now from stopping to talk about all these things we talked about the last 5 to 10 years, that we're really going now into implementation. And I'm excited about to see this impact. What I said before, what I heard now with the ozone layer, that now we can actually see the impact, because we banned things 10, 15 years ago.
Yeah. I was just reading about that as well. That's it's promising to see that our actions can also push us in the other direction. Stefan, I'm envious here. You're really at the forefront of two kind of mega trends right now in terms of rethinking the work, the workplace, and sustainability. So I imagine you're going to have a fascinating decade ahead. I think we've covered a good bit of the business here. Any last thoughts that you wanted to share with us?
Yes. I mean, I encourage really everyone to use what I just said before, to use the technology available to make this a better place. And we have the opportunity. And I think it's everybody's responsibility. If you're a CEO or if you're an employee, you have technology out there where you can really make an impact in terms of making this planet more sustainable, helping to reduce energy consumption. And there are so many low-hanging fruits as well. That for me, really personally, it's not a heavy lift. Overall, there's really many low-hanging fruits which we can harvest already. And we are a small player. We are a very proud player, but we are just a small player in a huge ecosystem where we play with bigger players together. And really, we have all the same intention to support our customers on their journey with sustainability, with the new way of working, and so on. And there's so much to do, as you just said before. It's really exciting. What I want to mention as well, what really helps when you see the stories like the ozone layer, when you can see the impact, it really helps also to tell then people you can do something and you make an impact, because you can see it. Now, a lot of times people think, okay, if we do that, there's no impact. I mean, I'm just the small person, and if I do something and I switch off the light now, what's the impact there? Yeah, but if a lot of people do that and they can see the impact, it makes a huge difference, in my opinion. And that's what's so exciting. And what's so exciting is that we, as you said as well, we are there at the core of this piece with our technology, and in all of these discussions, which makes it so exciting, but sometimes also very challenging.
Great. Well, for the listeners, if you'd like to learn more, check out enlightedinc.com. And Stefan, thanks for your time today. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Eric. Can't believe that the time flew by so fast. Was really encouraging and really good to chat with you today.
Thanks for tuning in to another edition of the Industrial IoT Spotlight. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at IoT1HQ and to check out our database of case studies on IoT1.com. If you have unique insight or a project deployment story to share, we'd love to feature you on a future edition. Write us at eric.walenza@IoT1.com.